On this Memorial Day weekend, FSRN brings you an exclusive documentary, A Real Marine, No Place to Serve. Please stay with us. Philippe Louis Jean is a non-citizen Marine who was among the first battalions to roll into Iraq when the war was declared. On his return, this young Haitian American was arrested by immigration authorities and spent 10 months in prison as the government tried to deport him to Haiti, a country he left when he was 5. He told his story to FSRN's Deepa Fernandez.
I was born in Haiti. I moved to America, Brooklyn, when I was 5. While in Brooklyn, attended James Madison High School. At the age of 17, I became an auxiliary police officer with the 61st Precinct. Then 2 years later, I joined the Marine Corps. Joined the Marine Corps, did pretty good. Got promoted pretty fast. I became a squad leader in about 1 year and 9 months. In an infantry unit, which is pretty fast, you know, that doesn't happen too often. So, deployed to Japan, came back. When I came back, an incident happened where at one point I started receiving phone calls from a female who had initially contacted me by mistake. She was looking for Lewis, but the wrong Lewis. You know, she was looking for Lewis from a different area. I made her aware, she hung up. A couple minutes later, she called back. And she initiated conversation. Me being a young guy, you know, I continued to speak. One thing led to another. About 2.5 weeks later, we met. When we spoke on the phone, we did discuss age and so on, kind of got to know each other a little bit better, so to say, you know. And age was never a question. I mean, I met her and I had no reason to question her age, by the way, by her appearance, you know. During the time we met, she attempted to perform oral sex on me. And that's as far as it went. I was approached and arrested by Naval Criminal Investigative Services. When he first arrested me, he told me, "I can't tell you why." I said, "You're not taking me anywhere unless, you know, you tell me why you're arresting me." He said, "You've been involved with a minor." Like, "What are you talking about?" He said, "You've been involved with a female under the age of 18. I'm like, "Who?" Oh, and it clicked in my head, like, wow, you know. So I was taken down to the station. He told me, "The female is, you know, is not new to the base." This all happened on base, by the way, you know, Camp Pendleton, California. He told me, you know, "This is a very small incident. It's not going to get anywhere, you know. You'll probably get what's called a non-judicial punishment," which is basically a slap on the wrist, you know, because this female is known on the base for getting around. So, I mean, and that was that. This happened in January of 2002. It didn't work out like he said, you know. It actually got much bigger than that, what he said. August 1st of 2002, I was court-martialed in the Marine Corps for the incident. The battalion commander, he had a lot to do with what happened, you know. And this is a guy, you know, he's a what we call an old school Marine, meaning he was around during the hard days of the Marine Corps. Also during the racist days of the Marine Corps, from Texas. My charges when I was court-martialed was adultery, because at the time I was married. My wife and I were separated between ourselves. We didn't go ahead and make it a legal separation, but we were having problems, so we decided to go our separate ways. And But for the military, because it was a legal separation or we weren't divorced, you're automatically charged with adultery, which means to have another person aside from your spouse to be involved with another person. Now everybody laughs at that. Yes, everybody laughs at that because nobody gets charged with adultery. The second charge was sodomy. Now sodomy in the Marine Corps is any other position other than missionary position, meaning man on top of woman. So therefore, if with my own wife I were to engage in a sexual act and she were to lay down on top of me, and for some reason my commander found out, he could charge me for that, for sodomy, because I did not have it in the missionary position. Everybody laughs at that because who's going to get charged? So you mean to tell me everybody in the military has sex in the missionary position? Nobody does anything different but missionary position in the military. I mean, that's ridiculous, and nobody ever gets charged for those two charges, which I got charged for. So those were my actual charges. Deal. I went to the military brig and I was released September 7th, 2002. I was sent to a new unit and trained in a new field as a mortarman, because before this I was an infantry squad leader, so now they retrained me for mortarman because they needed that position for Iraq. Mortarman, if you ever watch the movies, you see when the guys are standing around a long tube and they take like a little rocket and they drop in the tube and cover their ears and duck and it pops right back up. That's a mortarman. So I was retrained as a mortarman. 5 months later, January of 2003, I deployed to Kuwait with my unit.
Why did you want to go?
Because it's like practicing for a basketball game for 4 years and never getting to play this game. I mean, plus, you know, how much people could say they actually fought for the country in combat, you know. And even though I was born in Haiti, I was raised in New York from the age of 5. All I know is America, you know. I don't know Haiti. So I until the whole incident with immigration, I claimed America as mine, you know, I'm fighting for my country, you know. I considered America my country. Help people, basically, you know, protecting the country, that's helping everybody. That's how I look at it. Plus, of course, you get to travel, you know. I like to travel. Schooling, I'm not from a rich family. My family is actually very poor, so you know, they would pay for my schooling, so that kind of pulled me towards the military. A storm happened while I was still in high school, of course. So in my mind, you know, you have one war, you know, another 20 years passes by before you have another one. So going to war was never really a thought in my mind. I figured I'd go to the military and make it a career. Who knows, towards the end of my career, maybe I might see something, or, you know, but of course it came much faster than that. So I'm deployed to Kuwait. I was, like I said, I was given the option. I chose to go, and they said they'd love to have me go with them because I did have their experience. Even though I was lesser in rank, I did have the 4 years experience that a lot of those guys didn't have. So I went along with them, and basically we trained over there until the war was declared, and from there we moved from Kuwait to ultimately Baghdad. Well, honestly, I don't know why. I just said, in my mind, I figured I wasn't coming back. I mean, that's just my personal, you know, that was my personal feeling at the time. I really didn't think I was coming back, but... I was part of Regimental Combat Team 5, and amongst other regiments. And we were, everybody moved in different areas, of course, you know. We were the unit that was involved in taking over the palace, Saddam Hussein's palace. That was our ultimate goal. We deployed to Kuwait in January. We left Iraq in May, because my unit had to leave first because we were actually supposed to be in Japan at the time. So once the major fighting was done, at that point, once the palace, which was the objective, was secured, they sent our unit back first. So we came back in May of 2003, which would be, I guess, 5 months altogether. War, I mean, I think that hurt everybody that, you know, was close to me. I mean, everybody was stressed out. Basically, they didn't know if they were going to get the news that, you know, hey, Philippe is dead. You know, I mean, it, at any moment, that news could have came. And there was a long period of time where I wasn't able to call home, when none of us were able to call home for at least a month.
Old Army National Guard Staff Sergeant's unit was attacked by...
I mean, my mother, she lost a lot of weight, you know. She wasn't eating. She started getting sick.
We at war with terrorism, racism, most of all, we at war with...
I took, of course, a month leave. So on, because I wasn't really able to function at that point. I only had one arm or so on. And my unit did deploy back to Japan, and I didn't go with them. They deployed in December. I was transferred to a new unit. But March 25th, I was brought into my company first sergeant's office to fill out some paperwork, supposedly. This first sergeant and company commander, those two, they had been giving me a hard time, which is why it took so long to get my promotion as well. They wanted to stop me in any way they can, you know, and they told me this personally: we're going to do anything in our power to stop you from being promoted because of what you did 2 years ago. I'm like, but sir, first sergeant, look what I've done since those 2 years. I've you know, been meritoriously promoted, and I've been to a war, you know, and I mean, what more do you want? I was punished already for that mistake, and look at my accomplishments now. And they went on to tell me they didn't believe I was promoted meritoriously, and they're gonna look into it, and they accused me of lying at first. They told me they believe I falsified my paperwork and so on. I had heard about these two. And I kind of witnessed a little bit of what was going on, but once again, the whole racism issue. And I mean, believe it or not, it's still very much alive in the military, very much alive. It was more the new unit who didn't take the time to find out who I was and what my record was in the Marine Corps before. All they looked at is the fact that, hey, he was in trouble, that's all we need to know. And he's black. I mean, and I hate to say that, you know, but it is, you know, it is a reality. I mean, and once again, these two are, you know, I mean, I don't want to say the word, but I mean, I don't know any other ways to put it together. But I guess you could say Southern, you know, real Southern and redneckish, you know, type. And I don't know if I'm even allowed to say that, but they were.
Can't you see it? Can't you feel it? It's all in the air. I can't stand the pressure much longer. Somebody say a prayer. Everybody's got me so upset. The whole damn world is making me lose my rest. Everybody knows about this.
Thursday, March 19th of 2004. that night they came back, well, seems like everything checks out and you are lying. I said, what reason did I have to lie? I told you I am one of the best Marines you've probably ever seen. It's just I messed up at one point. I made a mistake. You guys have made mistakes at some point in your lives. They said, yes, but just not this big, though. I mean, and that's the same day. They did advise me that, you know, we called immigration. Immigration has a warrant out for your arrest. I laughed, of course, because in my mind, I was automatically a citizen because I just came back from the war. I misunderstood it at that time, but the president had issued a what's called an executive order stating that any non-citizen who's in the military will be expedited. Their citizenship applications will be expedited, and certain requirements they don't have to meet. So I figured I was automatically a citizen. That's what everybody said. Oh, you're automatically a citizen because you just took arms for the country. So I laughed. You know, I was like, how could you tell me, you know, I have a warrant? They know where I'm at. I was just in the office about 2 weeks ago. So how come they didn't arrest me then? And he was, of course, upset. And he was like, well, that's just what we heard. That's what they told us. I'm like, oh, well, they know where I'm at. Was sitting out in front of the first sergeant's door, and the company commander, he was not there at the moment, but I heard the first sergeant saying, oh, I have Louis Jean up front. Oh yeah, I told him just come fill out some paperwork, so I have him waiting out there. Oh, I have a crew coming. Yeah, it's a 3-man crew, I believe. They're coming. So automatically I knew something was going on, but I knew I hadn't done anything wrong, and you know, I have nothing to be afraid of, so I just wanted to see what they were up to. So he's like, I have a three-man crew coming. And then next thing he said, I don't know, Tijuana? He starts laughing. So I, of course, my assumption is that the commander must have asked him, where am I going to be deported to? That's why he answered, I don't know, Tijuana, and he started laughing. And that was it. So I waited there, and about 20 minutes later, an immigration officer came in, and they pulled me into the office. They told me, for the incident that took place in 2002, I'm found removable from America. And I said, that's impossible. Both my parents are American citizens. I'm married to an American citizen. And I just came from a war for the country. So all those things make me a citizen automatically. He said, no, you're not. He's like, you are removable. So put your hands behind your back. I kind of smiled. He's like, no, I'm not joking. Put your hands behind your back. You are under arrest. And that was on March 25th of 2004. And I sat in a San Diego correctional facility from that day until January 28th of 2005. 10 months and 3 days. If I would have died over there in Iraq, though, I would have been given my citizenship then, posthumously. If I would have died, but because I didn't die, oh well, you can't get it. That's how it works. So in death, you get your citizenship over there. I believe at one point the president issued a citizenship to a Mexican Marine who had died over there, issued to his parents after he was dead, you know. I was there, is your prisoner. That's it, you're a prisoner, you're nothing. One of the officers, he had recently got out of the Marine Corps, and he started working there. He would come over and talk to me, you know, because we were the same rank.
How were people mean? Like, what did
well,
it look
when
like?
Well, when I say some of these guards were mean, they basically treated you like you were nothing. Hey, you know, shut up, get over here, blah, blah, blah. And they treat you like you're nothing. Really, you're nothing. They talk to you like you're a little kid. I mean, I'm a grown man. My accomplishments are probably more than yours. What that officer that would speak to me, what he told me, this is what they're taught in class, is that we're second-class citizens. All we do, we complain about everything, and most of us are getting deported anyway, so you know what, just deal with them. And you know, that's what he told me he learned in his class while he was going to school. That's the general attitude, that everybody there is nothing, we're just waiting to be deported. Thank you. non-citizen, as a green card holder, a green card holder who commits a crime, which is considered a felony, is subject to deportation. Now, the thing with me, my crime was not a felony. I had a lawyer send a letter to immigration saying that in the military, these charges, adultery and sodomy, which is oral sex, is not a felony. They're not considered felonies in the Marine Corps. You don't get 37 days in a jail for a felony. 37 days. No, that doesn't happen. But for immigration, they have the right to determine whatever crimes they feel as a felony. So they actually used the sodomy crime, you know, which was oral sex, to try to deport me. That's what they used to try to deport me. Well, I mean, if it's a crime for you to, you know, receive oral sex in America, then most of us should be in jail, I guess. After 5 months, the immigration judge found me deportable. The immigration judge did deport me.
A dedication to all the refugees worldwide. One time. Say, I remember.
Of course, my heart, you know, nearly stopped. But I wasn't surprised either, you know. I mean, I was kind of expecting it. I was hoping it wouldn't happen, but kind of expected it.
The crookedness. How's it mingle with the good people we meet? Good friends we had.
That was about it, and judge ordered me deported, and of course I was scared, and I was frustrated. I said, you know, I was not even gonna fight at one point, which was appeal. I decided not to even appeal at one point, you know. No, right after the judge ordered me deported, I said I was not gonna appeal. I called my mother and my father. I said, look, I'm gonna just get deported because I can't be here any longer. I mean, 5 months of my life is already wasted. And really, for a country, if after what I've given to this country, I could say I've given to this country more than a majority of anyone, any true American, naturally born American, could ever claim, you know, to have done for this country. I could claim. I joined the military for this country, and then I went to war for this country. And a lot of people can't claim that, you know. A lot of true Americans cannot say that. But I could. And if after all that, this country is going to say I'm not worth it to be in this country, I don't deserve to be in this country, then I really don't want to be here anyway.
My drinks, my only remedy for pain of losing family. But while I'm gone, shorty, everything is going to be alright. Everything is going to be alright.
So I appealed. When I appealed, I had to wait basically another 5 months on appeal. And this you're just sitting and waiting. You have no more court sessions to go to. Your lawyer submits a brief to the Board of Immigration Appeals, and you just wait for them to come back and give an answer. That's it. And I sat down for another 5 months just waiting.
Something happening here. What it is ain't exactly clear. Now there's a man with a gun over there telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop, children. What's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.
They came back and said because there was a mistake during the DA, the district attorney, they made a mistake, which my lawyer pointed out. They didn't certify my documents. My documents were not certified, and according to the Board of Immigration, all paperwork has to be certified, all documentation, conviction documents, they have to be certified. Mine weren't. And they said because of this, you know, we terminate the case. So you could basically say that was a technicality. I was released January 28th of this year, nearly a year. That's the thank you for serving the country. That's the thank you we get as a non-American citizens, I guess.
Ready or not, here I come. You can't hide. Gonna find.
Believe it or not, this is not finished yet. I still have a long ways to go. I still have a long ways to go, and I'm afraid to be in New York, which is why I'm not gonna stay in New York too much longer, because immigration at any point here, they could come and pick me up again and basically detain me again, because in California there's a law preventing them from fixing their mistake and coming and getting me again. But I will still have to continue fighting for my immigration, for my citizenship, because right now I just have a green card, and if I apply for citizenship, they're going to say, you know what, you won your case, but you won based on a technicality, not for any legal reason. You won because we made a mistake, so therefore we're going to deny you citizenship. That's most likely what's going to happen. So now once this happens, I have to appeal, and then appeal to the district court, and maybe appeal to the Supreme Court, California Supreme Court, and that could take over 2, 3, 4 years to do, 5 years to do. By that time, my green card would have already run out, and when I try to reapply for green card, they might deny me on that too, and then give me the boot.
This land is your land.
From my unit, from the same unit that I was in. I didn't recognize him, but he recognized me. I was going up the stairs, and he said, Louis Jean. I turned around, said, how do you know me? He's like, 'cause I'm in your unit. I'm like, what? He said, yeah. He's like, first sergeant got me too. He's like, first sergeant got me too. He was from Venezuela. He said, yeah, the first sergeant got me too. He's like, after you left, first sergeant started calling immigration on anybody who's not American. There was another African Marine. He's like, oh yeah, he called immigration on G, but G was a citizen already. Immigration came and started bugging him, and he had his paperwork, he had his certificate, he's a citizen. And he went to the office and said, look, first sergeant, stop calling immigration on me, I'm a citizen. This is what this Marine told me. He said he called immigration on several other people who were already citizens. He's like, yeah. He's like, he's going haywire over there. He's calling immigration on any non-American. Now, if that's not racism, plain and bold, you know, what is, you know, what is? And I believe some legal action needs to be taken against this first sergeant. Hopefully, you know, somebody would, you know, maybe on your radio show will hear this and, you know, tell me how I can, you know, pursue this first sergeant, you know, and what he's doing. Several weeks back, my mother received a phone call, and she gave me the number, and I called them, and they asked me if I want to, because, you know, a lot of people are being recalled right now, you might as well voluntarily reactivate yourself, voluntarily re-enlist for another couple of years, you know, because I still have 3 years on contract as an inactive reservist. Now, being an inactive reservist, they could call me at any time they want in the Marine Corps and tell me we're sending you back to Iraq. And I can't say no, because if I say no, I signed the contract, so they could arrest me and put me in the brig again. So they still, Marine Corps still has control over my life, and they could still call me and send me back to Iraq to go die for America after all this has happened, and I have no say-so. I have no say-so.
A Real Marine, No Place to Serve was produced by Deepa Fernandez, with special thanks to Jocelyn McCullough of the National Coalition for Haitian Rights. If you want more information or want to support Philippe Louis-Jean to stay in the country or help him find justice, you can email him at saveamarine@hotmail.com. That's saveamarine@hotmail.com. We'll be back with our regular newscast tomorrow.